Moscow says it's transferring control of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant to Russia.
Ukrainian's Enerhoatom announced that the decision by Rosatom regarding the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is worthless.
Plus, on the road with a Ukrainian military commander discussing the war.
We are fighting for our people. We are fighting for our families. We are fighting for our children. We are fighting for our future.
And later in the program, how hospitals without power are using an African breathing device for premature babies that works without electricity. Today is Wednesday, October 5th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says that his country's military has made major, rapid advances against Russian forces and freed dozens of towns in the south and east over the past week. Reuters' Leila Sharokshahi starts us off.
There were multiple scenes reported like this on Tuesday of Ukrainian soldiers raising flags as President Volodymyr Zelensky announced major rapid advances against Russian forces and the freeing of dozens of towns in the south and the east. In a Tuesday nighttime address, Zelensky said, quote, "This week alone, since the Russian pseudo-referendum, dozens of population centers have been liberated. These are in Kherson, Kharkiv, Luhansk, and Donetsk regions." Russia proclaimed the annexation of those regions last Friday after holding what it called referendums, votes that were denounced by Kiev and Western governments as illegal and coercive. In Kharkiv, Ukrainian soldiers filmed themselves after retaking the village of Borivska Andriivka. Here in Kherson, one soldier raised the flag shouting, "Glory to Ukraine," with similar scenes said to have taken place in other areas of the region. The videos are all said to have been filmed on Tuesday. Reuters has verified the locations in the videos, but could not independently verify the date. Ukrainian forces retook several villages along the strategic Dnipro River on Monday, according to Ukrainian officials and a Russian-backed leader in the area. In the east, Ukrainian soldiers have been expanding an offensive after capturing the town of Lyman in the north of Donetsk. Meanwhile, Russian forces in the Donetsk and Kherson regions have been forced to retreat in recent days and seem to be struggling to stop an increasingly Western-equipped Ukrainian army. In a decree on Tuesday, Zelensky formally declared any talks with Putin impossible while leaving the door open to talks with Moscow if it got a new leader. The Kremlin said that what it calls its special military operation in Ukraine would not end if Kiev ruled out talks, adding that it takes two sides to negotiate.
Reuters reporter Leila Sharokshahi. Russia's leader has also signed off on Ukrainian annexations. From the Associated Press, Charles de Ledesma continues our coverage.
President Vladimir Putin has signed laws absorbing four Ukrainian regions into Russia, a move that finalizes the annexation carried out in defiance of international law. Earlier this week, both houses of the Russian parliament ratified treaties making the Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson and Zaporizhia regions part of Russia. The formalities followed Kremlin-orchestrated referendums in the four regions that Ukraine and the West have rejected as a sham. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Russia also said that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant will now be operating under the supervision of Russian agencies. In addition, Russian news agency TASS reported that the International Atomic Energy Agency Director General, Rafael Grossi, may soon visit Moscow. But the head of the Ukraine nuclear agency says that it will also control the facility. Now, to unpack the claims further, we're joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, can you help us understand what really do we know about who is in operational control of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant?
We can analyze it according to the Ukrainian official resources and to the International Nuclear Power Agency, because, of course, Russian forces and the Russian side, they have their own explanation of the situation as they consider this territory as a part of Russia. What we know from the Ukrainian side is that Ukrainian's Energoatom announced that the decision by Rosatom regarding the establishment of the operating company of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant with its registered office in Moscow is worthless. This is how they call it. They said that it's a parallel world in where Russian side is living, and they will not accept this, and neither Ukrainian side nor international community. This is what they mentioned. President of Energoatom regarding this situation, he said that for the moment, acting general director of the Zaporizhzhia power plant would be a new one, and he says that it would be he himself. So Petro Kotin, who is for the moment the president of the Energoatom, he will now be acting general director of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. So Mr. Kotin said that nuclear power plant will continue to work in accordance with Ukrainian legislation in the Ukrainian energy system and within the Energoatom entity.
And we'll continue to watch that since the plant is under Russian control. Turning our attention to the east, Russian commanders say that the front lines around the recently liberated city of Liman have been stabilized. But what are the Ukrainian authorities saying?
Ukrainian officials have confirmed that the front line from in Kharkiv region is basically moving toward the border to Luhansk region. Ukrainian officials call this area as Luhansk front line. And similar analysis we see also in the latest report of the Institute for the Study of War. So Ukrainian forces, after they liberated Liman, they have preferable positions in this area. And we can see that Ukrainian forces are actually moving toward the Luhansk region front line. We hear confirmations for this past couple of days. We have confirmations from the Ukrainian general staff that a couple of additional settlements were liberated in Donetsk region as well as in Luhansk region. So Ukrainian forces are already on that front line inside these regions. And this despite anything that Russian Federation have said and have decided on paper in terms of annexation. We also see that Kharkiv region is almost 100% clear now from Russian forces, but still heavy fightings are continue in some areas closer to the border with Russia.
Anna Chernikova is reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
And while in Ukraine, VOA's Miroslava Gagadze joined Ukrainian military officer Yuri Kochevenko of the 95th Brigade of the Armed Forces of Ukraine on their drive to Izum. Kochevenko shares his reaction to Russian mobilization and more.
So, Yuri, we are on the way to Izum, and Ukrainian forces just liberated Izum. Why are you fighting?
We are fighting for our people. We are fighting for our families. We are fighting for our children. We are fighting for our future. It's not about just ground, just land. It's really about future for us and our children.
Russians are old enemies. So if you really want to be free, we must finish this war now. Because now we have chance to do it.
How do you see the end of this war?
We will liberate all Ukrainian territory. But it's just first step. If free world really want to be safe, Russian Empire must be destroyed. We must do it not because we want it or we hate Russians. We must do it for future, because we want that our children grow up in safety.
Yuri Kochevenko is a member of the 95th Brigade of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, and he was speaking with VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gagadze. As soon as Vladimir Putin announced his military call-up for the war in Ukraine, tens of thousands of Russian men tried to leave the country, often by circuitous routes. Reuters spoke with two of them about the experiences that they had, and Ed Baran has their stories.
Kirill Ponomarev from Voronezh, close to Ukraine, has now reached Yerevan in Armenia. The 24-year-old journalist was already planning to leave and had a ticket for 6 days' time. The day after Putin's speech, he decided it was too risky to wait. It took him a week on a journey by car, train, and plane, spanning more than 6,000 miles.
The border guards were quite tongue-in-cheek. At the border, a guard got on the train and said, "Wow, I've never seen so many men on this train. Where are you all going?" Everyone said they were going to see their relatives, their grandmother, their girlfriend.
Yerevan and Tashkent in Uzbekistan, like other capitals of former Soviet states that let in Russians without visas, have become havens, especially so for members of the Russian urban middle classes who were able to move quickly and had resources to escape. Russian citizen Sergei Goncharov fled to Bishkek in Kyrgyzstan and faced questions at passport control.
The most common ones were, why are you going there? What are you going to do there? How long are you going to stay there? Have you got a return ticket? When are you coming back? Some of those were taken to a special room full of policemen for some reason, I don't know why, and subsequently they didn't get on the flight. So apparently the officers did not let them out of the country. The worst part is I basically had to leave my family, friends, loved ones, basically everyone in Russia.
Russia said over 200,000 people have already been drafted into the country's armed forces since President Vladimir Putin ordered a partial mobilization 2 weeks ago. Reports have surfaced of men with no military experience or past draft age receiving call-up papers, adding to outrage that has reignited dormant and banned anti-war demonstrations.
Ed Baran of Reuters News. And for additional updates on the war throughout the day, please visit voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. European Union member countries have agreed on another round of sanctions against Russia over its aggression against Ukraine. The bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said earlier that the sanctions package includes more restrictions in trade with Russia in steel and tech products and an oil price cap for Russian seaborne crude deliveries to third countries through European insurers, although a specific price on the future cap has yet to be defined. In addition, the sanctions include more individuals involved in Moscow's ad hoc annexation votes in occupied eastern Ukraine and people involved in bypassing sanctions. And European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Wednesday laid out the EU's winter energy plan as the war in Ukraine puts energy supplies across the continent in jeopardy. Von der Leyen said that the war had entered a new phase and that she said that the EU would support Ukraine for as long as it takes.
We see in particular the rising energy prices and gas and electricity prices that are leading to reduced purchasing power, and they are leading to a loss of competitiveness for our business in the international market. But our resilience in all these difficult times is remarkable. And what we have to do is work steadily on our resilience.
The United States also announced plans on Tuesday to provide an additional $625 million in military aid to Ukraine, a package that includes extra advanced rocket systems, which are credited with helping the country's military gain momentum in its war with Russia. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre gave a quick rundown of what's included in the latest tranche of aid during a press conference.
Today's package includes 4 HIMARS, 32 howitzers, 200 mine-resistant vehicles, and hundreds of thousands of rounds of artillery and mortar ammunition.
She also added that the Biden administration will be unwavering in its assistance for Ukraine as it fights to defend itself from Russian aggression.
They are fighting. The brave people of Ukraine are fighting for their freedom. They're fighting for their sovereignty. And so this is something that we believe, not just the U.S., our allies and partners around the world see this as an important partnership that we have to make sure that Ukraine is able to do that. And so as we have seen their success on the battlefield, as we have seen them take back even territory that was supposedly annexed just a couple days ago, we're seeing them have those gains and taking back their own territory. And so we're going to continue to make sure that we are there for the Ukrainians. That's why you heard we did the readout of the president's call with Zelensky, saying that we are going to continue to be there and be in partnership with them and also give them a heads up of what we're going to provide and making sure that they continue those successes on the battlefield. Look, this is important. This is very serious. When you're talking about a country's democracy, when you're talking about a country's freedom, it is important for us to be there and stand with the Ukrainian people, and that's what you're going to continue to see.
This announcement would mark more than $16.8 billion worth of U.S. security assistance since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. Russian President Vladimir Putin, who has the world's biggest nuclear arsenal, repeatedly has cautioned the West that any attack on Russia would provoke a nuclear response. Reuters' Christy Kilburn takes a closer look at the Russian leader's threat.
Will Russia use nuclear weapons? President Vladimir Putin has warned he's ready to use nuclear weapons to defend Russia amid the war in Ukraine. Putin cautioned it was no bluff.
Это не блеф.
And the U.S. and NATO are taking him seriously.
I've been clear myself, President Biden has been clear, our administration has been clear, that there is a risk, given all of the loose talk and the nuclear saber-rattling by Putin, that he would consider this, and we've been equally clear about what the consequences would be. We have communicated that directly to the Russians.
Moscow's nuclear doctrine allows for a strike after, quote, aggression against the Russian Federation with conventional weapons when the very existence of the state is threatened. By claiming 18% of Ukraine as part of Russia, the threat increased, as the Kremlin could cast any attack on those territories as an attack on Russia itself. Some British newspaper reports suggest Putin may already be planning a nuclear test on Ukraine's border. The Kremlin dismissed that as, quote, nuclear rhetoric. Putin controls the world's largest nuclear arsenal, including a new generation of hypersonic weapons and smaller tactical nuclear weapons. Russia has 5,977 nuclear warheads. The U.S. has 5,428. China has 350, France has 290, and the United Kingdom has 225, according to the Federation of American Scientists. Tactical nuclear weapons, usually a device used on the battlefield, have much smaller explosive power than the strategic nuclear warheads. They could be launched by sea, air, or land, though their effectiveness is a matter of debate among military experts. Alternatively, a weapon could be detonated over a remote, unpopulated area or a body of water, like the Black Sea, as a chilling demonstration of intent. Radioactive fallout would be limited to around half a mile.
And we're fully prepared to defend it. I want to say this again. America is fully prepared with our NATO allies to defend every single inch of NATO territory. Every single inch. So, Mr. Putin, don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Every inch.
NATO and the U.S. have not detailed publicly how they would respond to a Russian nuclear attack on Ukraine, but Washington says it spelled out to Moscow the catastrophic consequences that would follow. Options include a non-military response, a conventional military response throwing Washington or NATO into a direct war with Moscow, or a nuclear strike risking serious and immediate escalation. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
Our message is that any use of nuclear weapons is absolutely unacceptable. It will totally change the nature of the conflict, and Russia must know that the nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought.
Christy Kilburn of Reuters News. And finally, Russia's war in Ukraine has seen scores of hospitals and clinics bombed, along with frequent power cuts that can shut down life-saving machines. Medical aid groups are using a Kenyan company's breathing device for premature babies that works without electricity, helping to save vulnerable newborns in countries affected by conflict. Victoria Amunga brings us this story to round us out.
At this newborn intensive care unit in Kisumu, Kenya, nurses keep a close watch on at least a dozen babies who need oxygen support. Staff at the Jaramogi Oginga Odinga Teaching and Referral Hospital say this device brings some relief to those in respiratory distress, like this six-month-old baby. The device is a bubble continuous positive airway pressure system, or BCPAP.
It has helped us a great lot because before we had the machines, there were babies who needed the CPAP, but we were not able to initiate. We were just using the normal oxygen. Yeah, but currently we have seen that there are babies who improve very well when we initiate on CPAP.
The device continuously delivers pressurized oxygen, making it easier for babies in respiratory distress to breathe. Workers say water bubbles in a jar signify the user is breathing right. The device is being manufactured in Kenya. Reviral Healthcare, a manufacturer in Kenya's Kilifi County, and the U.S.-based Vayu Global Health Foundation took on mass production of the devices this year. Officials say bubble CPAP just needs a pressured source of oxygen, such as a cylinder, to function.
So once you have a continuous flow of 100% pure oxygen flowing in, the blender, which is the magic of the entire device and is literally where the magic happens, is able to pull in ambient air from the outside as well. You can then adjust this oxygen concentration between 30% to 100% before being delivered to the baby. This blended air can be filtered, is humidified, breathed in by the patient, and breathed out, and then is also, there's a pressure generator jar which controls the pressure and keeps the baby's lungs open.
Newborns are bearing the brunt of at least 400 attacks on hospitals in Ukraine, according to the World Health Organization, as the Russia-Ukraine war continues. Premature babies born in the war are being supported with their devices. In August, WHO acknowledged that at least 25 facilities across Ukraine, 17 of which are perinatal centers, are using the bubble CPAPs provided by donors. Officials say the device provides a non-invasive way of supporting newborns who are struggling to breathe. Doctors say oxygen blenders prevent lung and brain damage while giving babies pure oxygen. Its inventor, American Dr. Thomas Burke, told VOA that investing in the health of vulnerable newborns is key to controlling infant mortality.
People actually need to make budgetary commitments, and it means that health systems have to prioritize babies. I have found in my 2.5 decades of work on maternal health that there's sometimes a lot of talk around saving a mother's life, but at the end of the day, people aren't oftentimes willing to put finance behind saving a mother's life.
The BCPAP devices are available at a cost of $400 in Kenya. The system is being used in at least 20 countries in Africa, as well as Belgium and the United States. Nearly 1 million infants die annually from respiratory problems in low- and middle-income countries, according to the WHO. Advocates say more of the life-saving machines are needed around the world. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team here at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice. of America. Washington, D.C.